Thanks for listening to the Best of Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
This is the Best of the Herd with Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports Radio.
I want to start with this. It's remarkable to me that, sometimes I look at the media. I don't put the fans and the media in the same category. Fans are go be crazy. They pay to go see games. Fans short for fanatic. If not for fans, these games aren't as interesting. I mean, when you watch a game and the fans are going crazy, it makes the game better. The aesthetic. Fans should be nuts. They should be socially lubricated. But when it comes to the media and analysts, sometimes I roll my eyes. Are you guys paying attention to this stuff? So Joe Burrow yesterday, they measured his hands, and they're like small, like a 9. And Joe Burrow's laughing about it. Why do you think they test this stuff? Why do you think they test this stuff? Now, Patrick Mahomes came out and supported him because Patrick Mahomes' hands are slightly smaller than average. And everybody's like, well, Patrick Mahomes has small hands. Yeah, Patrick Mahomes has the best arm on the planet. That overcomes lots of shortcomings. He also had a dad who was a pro athlete. So Mahomes is a significantly better athlete than Joe Burrow and has the best football throwing arm in the world and has Andy Reid as his counsel. We know that Joe Burrow is a decent athlete, not special. He now has small hands, and we know he's got an average arm, not great, and has Zach Taylor, who we don't know if can coach, as his counsel. I remember years ago when Vince Young came out, and I was never a big Vince Young fan. I hated his throwing motion. I said, he reminds me of Tebow. He wins games. That throwing motion, he'll never be a great pocket passer. He had a very low Wunderlich. And people are like, it's no big deal. And I'm like, well, it's kind of a something, or they wouldn't test. I mean, it's and then everybody said, well, Dan Marino had a low Wunderlich. And I was like, yeah, but Dan Marino had the best arm and release in the history of the league. Folks, sometimes Steph Curry's shooting overcomes the fact that he's small and tiny and doesn't play much defense and he's not real vertical and you can push him around. He's kind of light. If you have world-class arm talent or world-class shooting talent, it can overcome obstacles. But this hand size thing, folks, let's just be honest about it. Joe Burrow is a good prospect. He's not a great prospect. He's a great story, and the media loves stories. Okay, Westbrook was a great story when KD left him. Didn't make him a greater player. He was a great story, and he won the MVP. LeBron was the better player and the MVP of the league. But LeBron's story, we were fatigued. We'd seen him dominate the league for a decade, so LeBron doesn't win MVP. Because we're over the LeBron story, right? I'm not, but most people are. The Westbrook triple-double year, this story is, wasn't any better player. Just kind of cheated on some rebounds, and nobody else could shoot, and he scored. And so this Joe Burrow thing, it is remarkable to me when we dismiss stuff that matters. It all matters. Arm, maturity, Wunderlich, hand size. It's all college productivity, coachability. It's all something. It all matters. The interview process, heck, we've had people on the couch the last 2 weeks. They're like, that interview process, that's huge. You're like, really? Talking for 7 minutes? They're like, oh, yeah. I mean, I never forget. Johnny Manziel came out, Jameis Winston came out, and Baker Mayfield came out. And I said, they're all really immature in college. Haven't they all been really immature at the next level? Johnny Manziel's out of the league. Baker's been talented but wildly immature with poor judgment, called out his own medical staff. And Jameis Winston's a bakery. He's a turnover machine. That's all judgment. Sam Darnold is the exact quarterback at the Jets as he was at USC. The difference is when he makes those mistakes in the NFL, it's way more punitive. They all get picked off. At USC, he made mistakes, but Utah guys or Oregon State guys didn't pick him off. Joe Burrow was a remarkable story, but he's a good prospect. He's not a special prospect. And by the way, I don't love him making fun of the hands thing. It's a little cocky for me. It's a little too much for me. I really like the way Tua is handling all of this. Tua's got a medical crisis on his hands, and every time you talk to Tua, he's just humble. He understands the concerns. This is not the end of the world for Joe Burrow. But the idea that all of this stuff doesn't matter a little, of course it matters. By the way, I saw a stat this morning. If you don't think, by the way, Cincinnati is a cold, wet, windy area. It'd be different if he's playing in a dome, maybe, behind a great offensive line. But he's going to be playing behind a bad offensive line in a wet, cold division. Hand size doesn't matter, gripping the ball. In the last decade in the NFL, three players have had concerns about hand size. Chad Henne, Ryan Tannehill, and Jared Goff. Well, in the history, in the last decade, those are the small hand guys. Goff has been the best, and most of you don't like him as much as I do. And he does have a fumble issue at times. So, and the other thing about Joe Burrow, he did say this yesterday. So, here's some sound Joe Burrow at the combine about the Bengals.
Yeah, of course I want to be the first pick. You know, that's every kid's dream. You know, I've worked really, really hard for this opportunity, and I'm blessed to be in this position. I'm not going to not play. I'm a ball player. Whoever picks me, I'm going to go show up. I'm just not going to be presumptuous about, you know, what they want to do. It's the draft. You guys have been covering it for a long time. You never know what's going to happen.
So that just guarantees, that's fine. That just guarantees, though, that he will go to the least talented roster in his division. Forget the AFC. Forget the NFL. In his division, without question, he will now go to easily the least talented roster. He is saying that this morning, and good for him. That's fine. As we said, we figured he would go to Cincinnati. It takes a lot of courage to bail on your home state. Cincinnati doesn't have a history of wanting to negotiate and move around in the draft. They're going to draft him and say, you're coming or not. But, this idea that you just dismiss hand size or you dismiss judgment in college, you dismiss, you know, the wonder look means nothing. It all is a story. It's a fabric, and you come out, and it matters. And the size 9 hands matters more for Joe Burrow than Patrick Mahomes, because Patrick Mahomes throws a football better than any human on the planet. And hand size can be like Steph Curry. When you're the best in the world at something, shooting threes, it can overcome other issues. All right, tonight, reason I wrapped up my Narcos Mexico season 2, because tonight Zion plays LeBron, very exciting. You know I love Zion. I think he's fantastic, and I think he's really, really important for the NBA. I'm a believer that if you're a great high school player, you should go to college for a year like a Duke or a Carolina or a Kansas or whoever. The only reason I know about Zion is college basketball. It's a great marketing platform, and he is an incredibly likable, dynamic, watchable kid. I just love his story. But there are people now that are talking about, hey, is Zion, in terms of marketing and stardom, the next LeBron? Folks, no, and it has nothing to do with just his game. We do this. We just don't appreciate the people we have. I've been doing this 30 years. There are 3 athletes that have simply been as big as the league they play in: Michael Jordan, Tiger Woods, and LeBron James. And that is it. If Tom Brady retires tomorrow, I watch less New England Patriot football. I don't watch less football. Okay, Michael Jordan left. The NBA lost 50% of its ratings, meaning he had equal value to the league. Tiger Woods out of contention. Even the Masters plummeted, 50% loss in ratings, meaning Tiger was at least half as big as the rest of the sport. If James Harden retired tomorrow, or Giannis, or Kemba Walker, or Russell Westbrook, league would be fine. If LeBron retired tomorrow, revenues would sink. The salary cap would go down. Everybody is freaking out. Even owners in the NBA are kind of freaking out about the last 2 years in the NBA, how the ratings have gone down. And, you know, obviously the players are great guys. There's very few. I can't think of anybody off the top that's not a good kid. Kyrie's a little flaky for my taste, but I don't think he's a bad kid. The league has great marketing. I've never seen more good players. Every time I go to an NBA game, I'm struck by how much the fans like the kids. It's just, it doesn't matter if it's Dame, it's Giannis. They're just likable players. Do you know what the problem is the last 2 years? LeBron left the Eastern Conference, and the ratings capsized. You're out thinking the room. LeBron left the East, went to the West, and the Eastern Conference early NBA window stinks. So as much as we like Zion, we tend to do this in sports. And I don't know if they do this in politics or Hollywood. I think we do it in politics, where when you have a good president, nobody appreciates it. We are so lucky. I feel so lucky that I got to watch Michael Jordan when I'm in my 20s and I'm starting as a sportscaster and Michael Jordan owned the world. And then here I get in my 30s and early 40s and Tiger Woods owned the world. And now LeBron. But it's interesting with Tiger and LeBron, and maybe it's social media, maybe it's the snarkiness that's devoured all of the country. The division we've had in the last 15, 20 years, I do think social media is a part of it. I never thought we appreciated Tiger in the moment. Half the people liked him and half didn't. And I was always like, listen, Tiger Woods changed my television habits. It'd be like 4 o'clock on a Sunday. I was like, oh, Tiger. I mean, they're like, two shows in my life have done that, maybe three. The NFL, The Sopranos, and Tiger Woods. Oh, it's 4 o'clock on a Sunday. I got to get to a television. So as much as I like Zion, do you get MJ, Tiger, LeBron? They're half as big as the league. And you're lucky LeBron always talks about our game. Many of you think LeBron is selfish. I thought last year he was distracted. Distracted isn't selfish. Okay, LeBron... the league needs him, and he knows it. That's why whenever LeBron talks, you ever notice what he talks about? He talks about, quote, our game. He's the ambassador and the face. He is the foundation of this house. Zion is just a really cool sports car Dad bought this weekend and parked in the garage. Can't wait to drive it. Oh, it's fun. Goes around the curves real great. But there's a difference between a cool sports car and the foundation and the mortgage and the title of the house, and that is LeBron. Can't wait to watch him tonight. Zion is, I got to tell you, there are not many players at 19 years old. I mean, I like Luka and Dallas. Like him. Zion gets me to a TV. Luka doesn't get me to a TV. Not much. Zion gets me to a TV. Not LeBron level, but he does.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
Fit matters in the NBA, I think, more than other sports.
It's very important, yes.
Because you only have like 12, 13 guys. So if you have a bad fit, like Kyrie Irving with Boston last year was a bad fit, it blows everything up.
Especially at the star position.
Big trouble. Now, in baseball, Joy, it's different. A third of the roster is down in the bullpen. If a guy was a jerk down in the bullpen, as long as the other pitchers can handle him, he doesn't even hang out in the dugout. In football, offensive guys don't always practice with the defensive guys. At halftime, games, practices, you go in different directions. But in the NBA, it's really a fit league. And like Utah's a prime example. I really like Utah, but Mike Conley, point guard, got hurt. Donovan Mitchell then played point guard. Then Conley comes back off the bench, then starting. Utah, it just can't get the fit right. They got the players, can't get the fit right. And that's with Quinn Snyder, who's a great coach. Last year, Boston, Kyrie Irving, great coach, can't get the fit right. And I talk about that because Joel Embiid last night had 49 points. Oh, it was like his best game ever. Ben Simmons didn't play. And remember when Embiid was hurt and Ben Simmons didn't have to play with Embiid? Oh, Simmons' numbers went up. This puppy don't work. Make a choice. It doesn't work. I mean, James Harden and Russell Westbrook are often better when the other guy's off the floor. Doesn't mean they're not both great, but that's why I can't really take Houston seriously in winning multiple playoff series. I just can't. I think over the course of time, Harden and Westbrook are not ideal for each other. And I can't take Philadelphia in the East seriously. They'll win a series because they're just too darn talented not to. But Houston and Philly, I don't like the fits. And it's just crucial. In my lifetime, the only team that didn't fit, that was great, and it never lasted as long as we thought, was the Miami Heat. LeBron and D-Wade's games were not really ideal for each other. There was a lot of similarities. LeBron was like a bigger D-Wade at times. Not a brilliant shooter, a super athlete, very aggressive and physical, often finished better at the rim than anywhere else. That's LeBron and D-Wade. They didn't have a center. They didn't really have a true point guard. Mario Chalmers drove everybody nuts. Norris Cole was too young. That team, that chemistry didn't work. But the advantage, the reason Miami made it work is three. For, well, number one, you had the best player in the league, maybe the fourth best player in the league, and maybe the ninth best player in the league. And so their talent was great. Secondly, they chose each other. So LeBron, D-Wade, and Bosh were buddies. They like chose each other. They made it work. And again, you know, they're three of the smartest guys in the league. So they just sort of, but it was never ideal. Let's be honest. If Ray Allen doesn't hit one jumper in 4 years, the most talented team wins one title. They kind of underachieved. They got beat by a Dallas team as a heavy favorite. They got beat by a San Antonio team as a favorite. And Ray Allen saves them from losing three out of four finals. So fit matters. Philadelphia's got to make a decision to me. And the decision's pretty, you know, I'll tell you, I'm in the minority here. I like Simmons. Because I think in this league, you have to either shoot threes or be able to get the ball to three shooters. And I think Simmons does that. I think Embiid has a track record of being hurt. He's sometimes a little distracted. He's a remarkable player, but I don't think titles go through bigs. If they did, Anthony Davis and Joel Embiid and Giannis, they'd have all the titles. And Anthony Davis, they don't. Wings and guards do. So I would choose Simmons. And I also think on the market, you can get more for Embiid. So I would go Simmons over Embiid, but I can't take Houston. I can't take Philadelphia seriously to win multiple series. The fit's bad.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
One of the things, I don't like to be seen as a bully. That's why I've had multiple opportunities with Baker Mayfield last year. I would say something. He would respond to what I said, and I would not respond back. You can do whatever you want with my opinions. If you like them, great. If you hate them, great. You want to mock them, great. If they inspire you, fantastic. But I have opinions. You can comment on my opinions, but I'm not going to go back and forth on Baker. I don't want to seem like I'm an older guy picking on a young guy. And I don't want to pick on Aaron Rodgers, although he's a grown up, net worth $300 million. But I saw another mock draft today. Bucky Brooks, my buddy, NFL scout, former player. He's got the Packers taking a quarterback in the first round. My takeaway is, what's the over-under on when Aaron Rodgers is going to talk about this? It's you can just sense a Danica Patrick, Aaron Rodgers podcast right around the corner. Or he's going to show up on 102.9 The Hog, the rock and roll station in Milwaukee. So, you know, Aaron's got opinions. Smart people do. He is the face of the franchise. He's got a Super Bowl, so he deserves an opinion. He has absolutely earned an opinion. But we know Aaron. And I don't think I'm being brutal. We are going to get some level of snark if he is asked about, Aaron, what do you make of the Packers considering drafting a quarterback in the first round? So we thought, what level of snark will we get? We thought we would introduce a new game on the show today.
Tonight. How will Aaron Rodgers respond to the Packers potentially drafting a quarterback?
I thought that was an interesting change.
Aaron Rodgers enters the snark tank.
Okay. There are levels of snark. When he is going to be asked by Milwaukee's Best Rock radio station or the Milwaukee Journal, or he's going to be, you know, at one of these OTAs, he's going to be asked about it. So we're going to try to guess. We're all going to try to guess here. The level of snark on Snark Tank that will come from Aaron Rodgers. Now, will it be baby snark? In almost likable. You ever go to an aquarium and you see a baby shark and you're like, it's kind of cute, even though it could eat my child. It's kind of adorable. Will it be baby snark like this?
How disappointed are you that you will not be a 49er?
Not as disappointed as the 49ers will be that they didn't draft me.
I kind of like that. That's kind of
spicy.
Yeah, a little spicy. It's baby snark. Or will it be great white snark, where it's got a little teeth to it, this one?
Five letters here, just for everybody out there in Packerland and yourself today. R-E-L-A-X. Relax. We're going to be okay.
A little less likable, a little more snarky. Definitely not baby snark. He was kind of taking a shot at us. Or will it be Snarknado, like flying from the sky? This was Aaron Rodgers when the Packers told his quarterback coach, see ya, and didn't give Aaron Rodgers even a little heads up.
Well, my quarterback coach
didn't
get retained.
Yeah.
You know, I thought that was an interesting change, really, without consulting me. There's a close connection between quarterback and quarterback coach, and that was an interesting decision.
So will it be baby snark, great white snark, or snarknado?
I think it'll be baby snark.
You think he'll just be kind of funny snarky?
Yeah, it'll be funny. Because right. I don't think Aaron Rodgers truly believes he's being replaced, which he's not being replaced.
What if this company drafted me in the first round of their pick? Wouldn't be happy.
I mean, you feel like you're in a vulnerable spot.
I'm saying I may go great white snark.
You might go. No, if they do take a quarterback, which it's there's enough smoke there that there's probably some fire to it. He's gonna sit in the same way that Aaron Rodgers did.
All right, can I do the open again? Now we're closing another edition, our first edition of Snark Attack.
Tonight, how will Aaron Rodgers respond to the Packers potentially drafting a quarterback?
I thought that was an interesting change.
Aaron Rodgers enters the Snark Tank.
Sharknado's a fun movie.
I didn't watch it.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
The media is, I'm running out of patience with the American media. Deontay Wilder came out yesterday. There are excuses in life, and there are reasons. And Deontay Wilder's a great boxer. I was at the fight. Joy and I were at the fight. And he said, listen, man, it wasn't my night. I had to walk into that ring wearing 40 pounds of apparatus. And, and people laughed at it. And people said, well, you know, that was, come on, that's an excuse. First of all, one of the things I witnessed at this fight, it was so hot in the arena. You can't prepare for that. Then Tyson Fury took 10 minutes to come out. And Wilder, who wrapped his gloves actually pretty early, about an hour and a half before the fight, had to wear this goofy costume. I'm not a big fan of this stuff. If I could criticize networks, they drive me nuts on this, even my own. Can we stop making pregame shows an extra quarter or an extra three rounds? Let's get to the sports. Tom Brady has never in 9 Super Bowls thrown a touchdown pass once in the first quarter. He's 0 for 9. He's got 1 field goal in 9 first quarters. Why? Because he gets out of rhythm. This fight put both these guys out of rhythm, and it affected one fighter. It's not an excuse. It's a reason. Now, he didn't have to choose to wear that apparatus, but I don't doubt for a second that Fury taking 10 minutes to come out threw Deontay Wilder off his rhythm. He was just not ready to fight. If you don't think rhythm matters, watch NBA players shoot free throws. Watch guys on the tour serve the tennis ball, men or women. Watch guys on the PGA Tour before their putts. Peyton Manning, I was told this by a Peyton Manning teammate. He goes, part of Peyton Manning's struggles for the first decade in his career in the playoffs was he was very rigid in his preparation. Peyton's a routine guy. Eli was not as much a routine guy. So Eli was better in the playoffs than in big games. You could throw him off his routine. But Peyton was very rigid in terms of his routine. Well, you go to a playoff game. The playoff game's on Saturday. You're off your routine. The commercial breaks are longer. The halftimes are longer. And Peyton Manning, until the very end of his career, really struggled getting out of his routine. We've heard about this from Kirk Cousins. Joy and I do this show every morning. Routine is a huge part of our show. If I get thrown off it, my first segment's never quite as good or as efficient or as smooth. You know, Greg Olson was on our show at the Super Bowl, and he talked about Carolina going to that Super Bowl, and he said it just these big events feel different. You get out of your rhythm.
The energy in that stadium is zero. There's not a lot of true passionate fans. I mean, the NFC Championship, we're blowing out the second best team in the league, the Cardinals. Your fans are going crazy. People don't sit down. The Super Bowl crowd is just different. There was no energy. TV timeouts take 10 minutes. You know, we just never found our groove. And we were the best offense in the league. There was something about that game, the rhythm of that game, we just really struggled harnessing. And, you know, it cost us an unbelievable shot of winning a Super Bowl.
Routine equals comfortable. Comfortable equals more success. Watch major league batters. I mean, I can almost see in my head Derek Jeter's rhythm in between pitches. They get into a rhythm, and Deontay Wilder's rhythm was thrown off. I thought he controlled much of the first fight. I thought he was dominated from the very beginning. Once Tyson Fury went 12 minutes coming into the ring, it completely threw him off. He lost the, you know, the arena's hot, the gear's heavy. They take the apparatus off. Fury comes after him. He was never right. These Super Bowls, you ever notice the offenses in the first quarter are dead. Well, you make the players stand around for 15, 20 extra minutes in their gear in Miami. So I think the next fight will be very competitive, and it may have a different result. Please, Deontay, get that nonsense off. Do the Tyson. Shorts, cut-up hoodie, walk in, take it off, and fight.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
Since the Eagles, 21 years ago, hired Howie Roseman, just think about this. 14 playoff berths, 10 division titles, 6 NFC championship appearances in a Super Bowl. You may want to listen to him. And he is joining us via the Coward Global Satellite Network in Indianapolis. This stuff is all fun for me. I'm a mock draft dork. I am proud of it. But some of it has to matter, Howie, or you would not be there. Give me an example where you've gone to a combine and it has offered clarity on a player, where you had a question or two and it offered some clarity on an Eagle.
Well, first of all, we miss you here in Indy. You know, it's not the same without you. We'd love to have you, man. We got good restaurants here. It's fun. But we'll do it this way until we get you here live. And I think when you talk about this process for us, you know, you look at it like kind of like a seesaw. So when you watch the tape, that's part of the evaluation. And then you want the testing to match. And when it does, you feel really good about a player. You feel really good about a pick, you know, because you have the objective and the subjective information kind of matching. Now, when one side is kind of uneven a little bit, like you got Batman on a seesaw right here, it's a little bit of a problem. So you got to figure out what kind of resources you want to put into that. And that's for us. This is part of it. When you talk about the information, the medical is really important. The interviews are really important. And then the testing by position, it helps us get a sense of what that guy has in his body.
They say there's going to be 50 wide receivers potentially drafted, Howie. We have kind of a sea change happening in football in America, where the best athletes are now playing wide receiver, it feels like, and quarterback. I can remember a time in my life where the NFL draft felt like there were 20 running backs. Now, the state of California in high school football may have 2 really elite running backs and 40 wide receivers. You guys need, obviously, I believe, even with Deshaun, you could use a speed receiver. There's a lot of mock drafts having you taking speed receivers. But when you come into a draft, Howie, and there are 45 potential drafted wide receivers, would it potentially make you think, you know what, we can get it later, we can get it later, we can get it later? How does it change your psychology when one position's loaded?
Yeah, well, it's interesting because you look at like a draft like last year where the defensive line class was really loaded.
Yeah.
And it allowed us to get a left tackle, a guy that we think can be a really good left tackle, and trade up a little bit and get him at 21, where most years that left tackle, he's going 10, 12, 15, somewhere where when you're in the 20s, you got no shot. But at the same token, then you've had drafts where it's really strong in a particular position, and guys are saying, I want to get the guy I really like. And so you're left with kind of the leftovers. And so we need what's best for the Philadelphia's, which matches the skill set that we're looking for out of every position, not only the receiver position. But I think it's most importantly, like, we have a quarterback who's in his prime, and we got to make sure that we surround him with protection up front, that we have the offensive line that's able to protect him and keep him healthy, and that we surround him with playmakers as well. And you saw it a little bit the last 2 years in the draft. You know, last year in the second round, we drafted Miles Sanders and J.J. Arcega-Whiteside, who we expect to take a big jump from year one to year two. The year before, coming off the Super Bowl, we had Dallas Goedert, a guy that, you know, we think is going to be an incredible player for us going forward and really complement Zach Ertz, who obviously a great player in his own right. So I think we just want to make sure that when we look back at the years that we had Carson Wentz, we maximize his ability to be successful.
Yeah, that's interesting. And you guys moved up to get Carson. It paid off. You also paid him a contract after a couple of injuries, which some people push back on. But I've always said this about Carson. He's the only guy in the league that does things that Patrick Mahomes does. I trust my eyes. I think he's an all-time special, unique talent. And to your point, now it's time to give him that support. I want to talk about every team has a different philosophy. I can remember the late Al Davis. He loved speed. He loved guys that could go over the top. If I was to look at your draft patterns, what matters to Philadelphia? What is it? You know, Rich McKay once told me he loved players who had been big in big games. Some guys shrink, some guys rise. It mattered to him to get the SEC left tackle that was great in a big game. What is your DNA in this thing, this whole game of talent acquisition?
Well, I think the first thing about it is that we're building a team. We're not collecting talent. We have a limited amount of resources, whether it's draft picks, whether it's salary cap space. And so we got to keep the main thing the main thing. We got to figure out what our priorities are and make sure that those are taken care of. And once those are taken care of, you can build out. You can figure out everything else that you need, but you have no chance if your priorities aren't taken care of. You know, in Philly, it's no secret for a long time. We're going to build along the lines. We're going to try to have a great quarterback. And then we're going to try to make sure that we have weapons for the quarterback, that we're preventing the big plays. And we're going to build a team like that. And you can't have everything in this league. You just can't. There's not enough salary cap space. There's not enough draft picks to be able to do that. So we're going to focus on the things that we can do to help our football team win as many games as possible. And hopefully a big part of our offseason already off the field has been, can we start a little faster than we have the last 2 years?
Yeah.
And maybe not put ourselves in the hole where towards the end of the season, every game is do or die.
Have you ever overthought the combine, paralysis by analysis? And I know this is a question that, I'm asking you to say, have you ever missed? But is there a danger in it, Howie? You watch so much darn tape. You fall in love with a guy. You overthink it, maybe talk yourself out of a guy. Has that ever happened to you?
There's no doubt about it. You definitely have those situations, and then it kind of flips itself on the head. Like, you know, last year we had this kind of theory and we looked at it just from the personnel side, the analytics side, and there had never really been successful receivers drafted high who never had tremendous production in college. And then two guys came out last year who were drafted relatively early, who had tremendous production in the NFL. So I think we have to be open-minded and see where the league is going as well.
Could you, Howie Roseman is joining us, executive VP, general manager of the Eagles. He's been there 21 years, 14 playoffs, 10 division titles, 6 NFC championship appearances, and a Super Bowl. So, okay, this morning I'm the bad guy because I do think hand size means something. I don't think it's everything, but I think this is a story. And here I look at Joe Burrow and I'm like, listen, he had the best offensive line. He had a great running back. He had great receivers. LSU's a football factory. He could go to a team with lesser of everything. Can you give me some clarity? I'm not saying hand size is everything, but I always thought, you know, it's something. Isn't it something?
It's something. As you talk about a quarterback and his ability to protect the ball, to throw in bad weather conditions, it's something. Now, the question, where's the breakoff? And what really matters? And also, when you talk about size, when you have a smaller quarterback, hand size traditionally has mattered more for shorter quarterbacks. You know, the bigger the hands, the shorter quarterbacks, those guys are tremendously successful. Without, you know, wanting to tamper, there are some shorter quarterbacks in the National Football League who have huge hands. And they'll be able to control the ball in bad weather conditions. Now, that's not an absolute deal breaker. I mean, obviously, you're talking about a player who's a tremendous player, an outstanding player. You know, we're not picking anywhere close to where it's going to be a discussion. But I think it all is thrown into the pot as you're trying to come up and figure out the best recipe for success.
By the way, you're a very aggressive.
I just kind of made up that line. I'm going to use that. I kind of like that. Throw in the pot recipe for success. I kind of like that.
I may steal it. Joy and I always talk about this. You're aggressive. You're a guy that'll go, and I think aggressive wins in sports, that you got to believe something. You got to be early on analytics. You got to be aggressive. Jerry West used to say, after he made that Shaq deal with Orlando, he almost threw up, that, you know, it's really hard to make big deals. You're a guy that makes big deals. Do you ever have a night you don't sleep? Because you're a guy that'll trade up, the Carson Wentz moment.
All the time. But I feel like our job, our responsibility is to get out of that bell curve. You know, most guys are going to be in that middle of that bell curve. And to be great, you have to be in that bottom of that bell curve. And the only way to do that is to get outside the box, is to think differently and be aggressive. We're very fortunate in Philadelphia that we have an owner who encourages aggressiveness, who doesn't come back and say, you made this mistake because you were too aggressive. You know, I think about the Sam Bradford trade and where we were, and we really want Carson to sit for a year.
Yep.
And that trade was made a week before the start of the regular season. And I knew it was the right thing for our football team, for our organization going forward, to recoup some of the picks that we traded for Carson.
Yep.
But I also knew there was risk in playing Carson, who had missed some of the preseason due to injury, who was really coming in and scheduled to be the third quarterback, and that it was going to put a lot of people at risk. And I remember, you know, not sleeping at all that night and just kind of staring at my ceiling and thinking about it and getting on the phone with Rick Spielman at 5:45 the next morning and, you know, talking to him. And I said, "You able to sleep?" And he said, "Not even a little bit. How about you?" And I said, "Not even a little bit," you know, and that's the nature of the job. And these are hard decisions, but that's our responsibility. Our responsibility is to make tough decisions and to make sure that we do a lot more right than wrong.
Howie, great talking to you. Howie Roseman.